Hi, I'm Eileen, and I'll be reading from Newsmax, Tuesday, April 7th, 2026. Trump rebuts war crimes, claims over Iran hits, defends infrastructure targets, by Newsmax Wires. President Donald Trump on Monday pushed back on accusations that U.S. strikes on Iranian infrastructure could constitute war crimes, saying criticism of attacks on power and energy sites is wrong as his administration escalates pressure on Tehran. Speaking at a White House press conference, Trump dismissed concerns raised by lawmakers and legal experts, insisting the targets are tied to Iran's military capabilities and broader war effort. They say war crimes. It's not, Trump said during the briefing, which aired live on Newsmax and the free Newsmax 2 streaming platform, arguing that infrastructure such as power facilities can be legitimate targets in modern warfare. The comments follow warnings from some U.S. lawmakers, including Senator Chris Murphy, Democrat from Connecticut, who said proposals to strike civilian infrastructure raise serious legal concerns and could amount to violations of international law. International human rights organizations have also raised alarms, with Human Rights Watch saying the targeting facilities essential to civilian life, such as electricity and water systems, can constitute war crimes if they disproportionately harm civilians. Legal experts point to the Geneva Conventions, which restrict attacks on objects indispensable to the survival of the civilian population. Trump framed the strategy as necessary leverage in the conflict, reiterating that the U.S. could expand strikes on Iran's energy. Energy grid if Tehran does not reopen the Strait of Hormuz. He said some Iranian civilians support the campaign and want continued strikes despite the damage to infrastructure, according to The Guardian. The remarks follow a series of statements from Trump in recent days, including warnings that Iran could lose every power plant if it fails to meet U.S. demands, as reported by The Washington Post. Iran has condemned the threats as violations of international law, while European leaders and UN-aligned experts have voiced concern about the humanitarian impact of strikes on civilian facilities. The issue has become a central flashpoint in the widening conflict, as the Trump administration argues that degrading Iran's infrastructure will hasten an end to the war, while critics say the approach risks breaching legal limits on warfare and worsening civilian impacts. Trump did not indicate any shift in strategy during Monday's appearance, signaling that additional strikes remain under consideration as the administration continues to press Iran for concessions. Trump repeats Iran deadline, says people want freedom, by Charlie McCarthy. President Donald Trump reiterated his Tuesday deadline for Iranian leaders to open the Strait of Hormuz, warning Tehran that time is running out as U.S. military pressure intensifies. Speaking Monday at a White House press briefing shown live on Newsmax, flanked by CIA Director John Ratcliffe, War Secretary Pete Hegseth, and Joint Chiefs Chairman Dan Rosenstein, Trump made clear that Iran has until 8 p.m. Eastern Time Tuesday to comply or face severe consequences. They have till 8 p.m. tomorrow night, Trump said, stressing that the ultimatum follows days of escalating U.S. operations in the region. He said he would act decisively if Iran fails to meet the deadline. This is a critical period, he said. We're going to find out. The president's comments came as the U.S. continues a military campaign against Iranian targets, including what officials describe as thousands of strikes aimed at degrading the regime's capabilities. Trump touted the U.S. overwhelming military strength, saying it could cripple Iran rapidly if necessary. He emphasized that the Iranian people are not the enemy, and that many are desperate for freedom after decades of repression under the regime. They want freedom, Trump said, citing intelligence intercepts indicating some Iranians have urged continued U.S. pressure despite the risks. He said ordinary Iranians have endured crackdowns for speaking out, including executions and lethal force against protesters. He pointed to past demonstrations where civilians were allegedly shot by regime snipers, underscoring the danger of dissent. They were told, if you protest, you'll be shot immediately, he said, describing a climate of fear that has kept many off the streets. Trump argued that the desire for liberty remains strong among the Iranian population, even willing to see power plants taken out. They will be willing to suffer that in order to have freedom, he added, suggesting that many Iranians see U.S. pressure as a path to change. The president also indicated that while regime change is not the official goal, any shift in leadership could produce a less radical and more stable Iran. We're dealing with a much different regime than before, Trump said, while maintaining that preventing Iran from obtaining nuclear weapons remains the administration's top priority. Trump defended his broader strategy, including withdrawing from the Obama-era nuclear deal, which he has criticized as paving the way for Iran to develop nuclear weapons. He argued that past administrations let Tehran grow, while his policies have weakened the regime. As the deadline approaches, Trump signaled openness to a deal and readiness for escalation. They would like to make a deal, he said. We'll see what happens. Charlie McCarthy, writer-editor at Newsmax, has nearly 40 years of experience covering news, sports, and policies. Trump, rescue in Iran relied on dozens of aircraft. Subterfuge. The United States relied on dozens of aircraft, hundreds of personnel, secret CIA technology, and a dose of subterfuge to rescue a two-man F-15E fighter jet crew down deep inside Iran, a risky mission that President Donald Trump and his top defense aides detailed on Monday. U.S. forces rescued the pilot within hours of the jet going down late Thursday, surging helicopters, mid-air refuelers, and fighter aircraft deep into Iran after confirming his location. Trump said in a news conference at the White House, describing the military operation in an unusual level of detail. The second airman aboard the aircraft, the weapons system officer, was rescued nearly 2 days later. An A-10 Warthog, which was the attack aircraft primarily responsible in keeping contact with the downed pilot on the ground, was hit by enemy fire while engaging Iranian forces, said Dan Kane, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. The A-10 was not landable, Kane told reporters, but the pilot continued fighting before flying to a friendly country and ejecting. He was quickly rescued and doing fine, Kane said. The rescue of the F-15 pilot occurred before the Iranians could marshal a comprehensive search of their own, but finding and bringing home the weapons systems officer was an even more complicated endeavor. The officer who rode in the back seat of the F-15 flying under the call sign Dude 44 Bravo was injured but followed his training to get as far from the crash site as possible. He managed to climb mountainous terrain and hide inside a cave or crevice. He contacted U.S. forces Saturday. When a plane crashes in hostile territory, they all head right to the site. You want to be as far away as you can, Trump said. CIA Director John Ratcliffe. said the spy agency used exquisite technology that no other intelligence service possesses to locate the aviator. At the same time, the CIA mounted a deception operation to mislead Iranians who also were trying to find him. Radcliffe said the search and rescue operation was comparable to hunting for a single grain of sand in the middle of a desert. The CIA declined to respond to questions Monday about the kind of technology used to locate the airman. Protected by an air armada of drones, strike aircraft, and more, rescuers moved in on Sunday to pick up the weapons officer and bring him home. Many dozens of aircraft that were part of the operation were there for deception, Trump said. We were bringing them all over, and a lot of it was subterfuge, Trump said. We wanted to have them think he was in a different location. Back in Washington, national security officials coordinated on a call, keeping the phone line open for nearly 2 days straight. From the moment our pilots went down, our mission was unblinking, War Secretary Pete Hegseth said. The call never dropped. The meeting never stopped. The planning never ceased. Trump. Leak wrist rescue mission of F-15, crewmen in Iran. President Donald Trump said Monday his administration is hunting a leaker and warned of possible prosecution after information about a downed U.S. Air Force F-15E Strike Eagle crewman surfaced during a sensitive rescue mission. The pilot of the fighter jet was found shortly after the plane was shot down Friday by a shoulder-fired missile. His wounded crewman, a weapons system officer, hid in mountainous terrain until the U.S. military located his position and pulled him out Sunday morning. Trump said at a White House news conference, which aired live on Newsmax and free Newsmax 2 streaming platform, that the administration released only information about the pilot being rescued, not about the missing crewman. We're looking very hard to find that leaker and talked about somebody missing, he said. They basically said that we have one and there's somebody missing. Well, they didn't know there was somebody missing until this leaker gave the information. Trump said if the media organization that first reported the information does not reveal its source, it could face criminal prosecution. So whoever it is, we think we'll be able to find it out because we're going to go to the media company that released it and we're going to say national security, give it up or go to jail, he said. And we know who and you know who we're talking about because some things you can't do because when they did that, all of a sudden the entire country of Iran knew that there was a pilot that somewhere on their land that was fighting for his life. Trump did not name the media organization involved. Asked for clarification, a White House spokesperson told Newsmax an investigation is underway, but offered no further details. The Military Times reported that Israel's Channel 12 was the first to report on the missing crewman, but it linked only to an ex-post by reporter Amit Segal. The Post stated Western source, one of the American crew members, was successfully rescued. Segal told the New York Post on Monday that his username he was the first to report the news, but pledged not to disclose who tipped him off. Several U.S. media outlets, including Axios and the Washington Post, quickly published stories following Segal's post, quoting U.S. and Israeli officials and sources familiar with the matter. Trump said the leaker and the media organization jeopardized the rescue operation, putting this mission and that man at great risk, as well as the hundreds of millions of people that went in there looking for him, because everyone knows that we're going in. It also made it much more difficult for the pilots and for the people going in into search for him. All of a sudden, they know that there's somebody out there. They see all these planes coming in. It became a much more difficult operation because a leaker leaked that we rescued one, but there's another one out there that we're trying to get. He said it did not help that Iran offered a reward of approximately $60,000 to any Iranian who found the crewman and turned him over to the authorities. So actually, the country, Iran, put out a major notice, Trump said. You all saw it, offering a very big award for anybody that captures the pilot. So in addition to a hostile, very talented, very good, very evil military, we had millions of people trying to get an award, he continued. So when you add that in to it, but we have to find the leaker because that's a sick person, probably didn't realize the extent of how bad it was. I can't imagine that person did, but we're going to find out. It's national security, and the person that did the story will go to jail if he doesn't say, and that doesn't last long, and I think everybody would understand it. Pentagon seeks $4.5 billion to rebuild Tomahawk stockpile by Newsmax Wires. The Pentagon is preparing to request roughly $4.5 billion in fiscal 2027 to replenish Tomahawk cruise missile stockpiles, underscoring the growing strain on U.S. military resources amid sustained global operations. According to a Bloomberg government report, the funding push comes after heavy use of the long-range sea-launched missiles in recent conflicts, including the war with Iran, where hundreds have reportedly been fired. The surge has raised concerns inside the War Department about maintaining readiness for future threats. Tomahawk missiles remain a cornerstone of U.S. strike capability, allowing the Navy to hit targets from long distances with precision. At an estimated cost of roughly $2 million per missile, replenishing supplies represents a significant investment. Defense officials say the request is part of a broader effort to rebuild the U.S. munitions stockpile and strengthen the defense industrial base after years of underinvestment and rising global tensions. In addition to Iran-related operations, U.S. commitments abroad, including support for allies and deterrence efforts against adversaries such as China and Russia, have placed additional strain on weapons inventories. The Pentagon is pushing for multi-year procurement contracts with defense manufacturers to ramp up production and prevent future shortages. Officials argue that without sustained investment, the U.S. risks falling behind in an era of high-intensity warfare where advanced munitions are consumed rapidly. The proposed 2027 defense budget is expected to include not only missile replenishment, but also expanded funding for aircraft, missile defense systems, and other critical capabilities. The shift reflects recognition that modern conflicts require deeper reserves of high-end weaponry. Supporters of increased defense spending say the move is long overdue after years of what they view as neglect under prior administrations. They argue that rebuilding stockpiles and strengthening manufacturing capacity are essential to ensuring U.S. military dominance and deterring adversaries. White House aims to spend $377 million on renovations by Sam Barron. President Trump has proposed a sweeping increase in funding the White House renovations, requesting more than $377 million for fiscal year 2026, an additional $174 million for fiscal year 2027. The proposed $377 million represents an 866% jump from the roughly $39 million spent on White House upkeep in fiscal year 2025. An Office of Management and Budget spokesperson told Politico the funding reflects broader budgetary projections that go beyond basic maintenance, encompassing both modernization efforts and enhanced security measures. According to the spokesperson, the renovations will extend beyond the executive residence and include multiple areas of the White House complex, including plans backed by Trump to construct a new ballroom. Of the $377 million proposed for 2026, approximately $3 million is classified as mandatory spending, which includes private donations and designated for the ballroom project, spokesperson said. The ballroom proposal has already sparked legal challenges. On Friday, the Trump administration argued that a federal judge's order halting construction poses a direct security risk to the president and the White House. In an appeal filing, National Park Service lawyers warned that the court's decision to suspend construction is threatening grave national security harms to the White House, the president and his family, and the president's staff. Time is of the essence, government lawyers wrote, emphasizing that the project includes materials and infrastructure in order to create a heavily fortified facility. According to the filing, the planned construction includes features such as bomb shelters, military installations, and a medical facility. U.S. District Judge Leon in Washington, D.C. ordered a temporary halt to the project last week, including work that has already involved demolishing portions of the East Wing. Leon ruled that unless Congress explicitly approves the project, the preservationist group challenging the construction is likely to prevail. He wrote that no statute comes close to giving the president the authority he claims to have. The judge paused in enforcement of his order for 14 days to allow the administration time to repeal. The Associated Press contributed to this report. Rollins, U.S. working to ease fertilizer costs, by Solange Reiner. Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins said Monday that most U.S. farmers have already secured fertilizer supplies ahead of the spring planting season. While the administration is working to support those still vulnerable to rising costs tied in part to global conflict. Speaking outside the White House, Rollins said roughly 80% of farmers locked in fertilizer purchases last fall, shielding them from recent price volatility. The remaining 20 to 25%, she said, are now the focus of federal efforts to ensure access and affordability. The good news is that about 80% of our farmers actually last fall locked in their fertilizer, Rollins said, according to the Washington Examiner. So as we're moving into planting season, it's only about 20% to 25% of our farmers that didn't lock that in. Fertilizer prices have remained a concern for U.S. producers amid global disruptions, including conflict abroad that has strained supply chains and driven up input costs. Rollins said the administration is working directly with suppliers and stakeholders to prevent those pressures from overwhelming farmers who must still buy fertilizer this season. We are working directly to ensure that we can get them what they need and it won't bankrupt them, she said. Rollins also pointed to geopolitical factors driving the issue, saying the war has elevated the issue of fertilizer and how important it is for American farmers and, frankly, for our food supply. She tied food supply and security to national security and outlined steps for the administration that has taken to mitigate the impact. The president waived the Jones Act, Rollins said, referring to the law requiring goods transported between U.S. ports to be carried on American-built, American crew vessels. We opened up a line, I believe, from Venezuela. We have more announcements coming soon. She emphasized that immediate relief remains a priority for the minority of farmers still exposed to higher prices. The short term is really important, that for 20% of farmers that were keeping the fertilizer prices in that realm of the possible for them, especially in a tough farm economy, Rollins said. Farmers typically buy fertilizer months in advance as part of risk management strategies, though not are all able to do so. Industry analysts say those still buying on the spot market could face elevated costs depending on the regional supply conditions. The comments come as farmers nationwide begin planting key crops, a critical period for agricultural production and food supply stability. Solange Reiner is a writer and editor for Newsmax. She has more than 15 years in the journalism industry, reporting and covering news, sports, and politics. Harmeet Dhillon eyed for top DOJ role in Trump shakeup. Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights Division Harmeet Dhillon is reportedly being considered for a higher role in the Justice Department. A longtime conservative attorney and ally of President Donald Trump is emerging as a leader candidate for a major promotion as the administration reshapes top leadership at the DOJ, according to multiple reports. Among the possibilities under discussion is Dhillon's elevation to Associate Attorney General, the department's number three position, which would significantly expand her authority across key divisions, including civil litigation, antitrust, and election-related matters. The move comes amid ongoing upheaval following Trump's decision to remove former Attorney General Pam Bondi, signaling a broader push to install more assertive voices aligned with his agenda. Dhillon's rapid rise reflects both her legal track record and her willingness to take on progressive policies, a stance that has made her a favorite among conservative activists. Having built her career in deeply liberal San Francisco, Dhillon has developed a reputation as a combative litigator who challenged policies on issues ranging from religious freedom to COVID-19 restrictions and free speech. The entirety of my career has been a minority conservative viewpoint in a very liberal profession, Dhillon told Politico in a recent interview. Since taking over the civil rights division, she has moved aggressively to redirect its focus, pivoting away from traditional priorities such as affirmative action enforcement and toward combating woke ideology. Her office has launched investigations into diversity initiatives, targeted universities over alleged discrimination, and sought access to voter rolls as part of a broader election integrity effort. Supporters say those actions demonstrate exactly why she's suited for a larger role. She's been unflinchingly loyal to President Trump, one longtime ally told Politico, describing Dhillon as a freedom fighter who is willing to challenge entrenched bureaucratic norms. Critics, however, argue that Dhillon's approach represents a dramatic shift away from the Justice Department's traditional civil rights mission. Even so, her allies within the administration, including key figures in the White House counsel's office, appear to be boosting her prospects. If elevated, Dhillon would gain oversight of a broad swath of DOJ operations at a critical moment, particularly as the administration sharpens its focus on election security ahead of upcoming midterm contests. Bloomberg Law reported that her promotion could expand her influence over voting-related litigation nationwide. Dhillon has not confirmed any specific role, but has signaled openness to greater responsibility. It is the privilege of my lifetime to serve my country at the DOJ, she wrote Friday on X. I will continue to serve in whatever role the president deems appropriate. Charlie McCarthy is a writer, editor at Newsmax. TrumpAccounts.gov goes live. Robinhood to be broker. by Newsmax wires. The U.S. Treasury Department said Monday that Robinhood will serve as a brokerage platform for its new Trump Accounts program, while Bank of New York Mellon will act as custodian and manager of the accounts. Robinhood will act as broker and initial trustee, facilitating investment access within the accounts. Treasury designated BNY Mellon to oversee the rollout, including handling account administration and helping develop a government-controlled app for users, a secure, user-friendly platform that will enable families to easily access and manage their Trump accounts. The program is aimed at expanding access for eligible children within Treasury, retaining oversight of operations in the platform. The Trump Accounts program expects to officially launch on July 4th, 2026, although families are already able to open and manage accounts online at TrumpAccounts.gov or through their tax filing using an IRS form. Enrollment is expected to be conducted primarily through the website and dedicated app. Treasury has not yet announced a public toll-free customer service number. Patrick Aloco to Newsmax, Trump's approval dip, cost of leadership, by Michael Katz. Polling expert Patrick Aloco told Newsmax on Monday that President Donald Trump's relatively low approval ratings reflects the political cost of taking decisive action, pointing to tariffs and the ongoing conflict involving Iran as key factors. Appearing on Finity, a local founder of the Zeus Political Index addressed the Real Clear Politics polling average, which currently shows Trump's approval at 40.9%. There's always a cost to taking action, especially real action, a local said. Most presidents operate within the conditions they inherit, he said. They manage, they react, and because of that, their impact on people's day-to-day finances is often indirect, Aloco said. He argued Trump has taken a different approach, making what he describes as two very deliberate, high-impact decisions that are directly affecting voters. The president didn't do that, Aloco said. He made two very deliberate, high-impact decisions. He imposed tariffs, and he chose to engage militarily in Iran, he added. Those decisions, he said, are being felt immediately by Americans through rising costs, including higher gas prices and supply chain pressures. Both of those decisions hit the same place, the kitchen table crisis, gas supply chains, Aloco said. Voters feel that immediately, he said. The polling dip, he added, should be understood in that context rather than as a simple measure of political weakness. That's what leadership looks like, Aloco said. It's not abstracted. It's not tangible. And sometimes it's expensive in the short term at the kitchen table, he said. Recent surveys reflected in the Real Clear Politics average show Trump facing headwinds as economic concerns grow alongside geopolitical tensions tied to Iran. Rising fuel costs in particular have historically weighed on presidential approval ratings as voters tend to connect those prices directly to policy decisions. The locals suggested that dynamic is now playing out with Trump's willingness to take consequential action, producing immediate economic effects that are registering in public opinion. Wesley Clark to Newsmax. Diplomacy with Iran not finished, by Jim Mishler. Despite reports to the contrary, Iran has not shut the door on diplomatic talks with the Trump administration, former NATO Supreme Ally Commander Wesley Clark told Newsmax on Monday. Diplomacy is not finished, he said on the record with Greta Van Susteren. Clark said it has been a regular tactic of the radical Islamic Iranian regime to say one thing and then do another. So, when someone says they reject, okay, fine. But the talking is probably still going on, he said. There's probably pressure from both sides. Clark said the Iranian leaders know President Donald Trump is not bluffing about threats of military action. The Iranians have to understand that President Trump does not mean what he says, he said. Clark said talk that Trump ordered the military to target several Iranian-held islands near the Strait of Hormuz likely has substance. He is going to go after those civilian facilities, he said, adding that the question will be whether they are truly civilian or have dual-use purposes. And if they're dual-use and they're supplying power to nuclear research to factories that are producing military equipment and so forth, that's a legitimate military target. Clark said he believes it would be proven that the islands are legitimate military targets. But most of these power plants, my guess, would fall under the dual-use approach, and I think lawyers would say that is not illegal. Clark said whether an invasion of the islands would serve a purpose related to the fall of the regime remains unclear. Obviously, no one wants to see an escalation. The president doesn't want to see it, he said. We want the war to stop, but the Iranians are the ones that are driving this forward at this point. Clark said the Iranian leadership is nearing the point of failure. If the people turn against it, it'll collapse very, very quickly. They're struggling, he said. But he said Iran can still inflict damage. They do feel like they've got a real grip on the Strait of Hormuz. They feel that's a strategic weapon, he said. And they also have enough left in their arsenal to be able to punish, take out petroleum facilities and desalinization plants from our friends and allies in the Gulf. Clark also said he believes NATO countries that have been hesitant to support Trump attacking Iran will come around and be supportive. They're going to need to be with us because they're more dependent on this in terms of physical supplies than we are, he said. Trump on Monday told reporters that Iran could be taken out in one evening, and that night might be Tuesday night, warning Tehran it had to make a deal by the end of the day and Tuesday or face the consequences. Captain Scott to Newsmax. Accelerate Artemis program schedule by Nicole Weatherholtz. Retired astronaut Captain Winston Scott told Newsmax on Monday that NASA should consider accelerating its Artemis moon program as the U.S. pushes toward a planned return to the lunar surface. Appearing on Newsmax's Wake Up America, Scott said the goal of landing astronauts by 2028 is within reach, but only if the current pace is maintained or accelerated. Oh, I absolutely think it's possible if we keep the pedal to the metal, so to speak, he said when asked about the timeline. Scott emphasized that building blocks for success are already in place, pointing to financial support and mission planning. We've got the funding. We have a schedule. I think it's absolutely possible, he said. In fact, I'd like to see them accelerate that schedule just a little bit. And unless I miss my guess, I think those discussions are probably being held, Scott added. He noted that Artemis II mission is progressing smoothly and said preparations for the next phase are already underway. The mission is going very, very well, Scott said, and the plans for Artemis III are in the making. So I think it's quite possible that they'll make the goal 2 years from now. He acknowledged that one of the biggest remaining challenges is the perfecting the technology needed to land astronauts on the moon. Scott pointed out that while launch systems have advanced significantly, the human landing system remains under development. What we want to see is the development of the human lander part that will take astronauts from the Orion spacecraft to the surface of the moon and back, he said. Two private sector tech giants are competing to develop the lander capability needed for Artemis missions, Scott said. SpaceX Elon Musk is developing one of those systems, and Jeff Bezos Blue Origin is developing the other, he said. According to Scott, that competition is not only expected, but beneficial to the program's success. So we have two competitors there, and whoever gets done for us will do the first test in Earth's orbit, he said. Then we'll send them off to the moon to do a complete test. And then whoever gets done second will do the same thing. Scott said the structured testing approach will help ensure reliability while maintaining momentum toward the moon. We've got good, healthy competition, he added. It's going along real well, and I feel real good about the whole thing. Representative Mark Harris to Newsmax. Dems playing propaganda games over DHS funding by Solange Rayner. Representative Mark Harris, Republican from North Carolina, on Monday criticized House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat, New York, for urging House Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican, Louisiana, to reconvene the chamber from recess to address funding for the Department of Homeland Security. He called the move Democratic propaganda amid the shutdown. Speaking on Newsmax's Bianca Across the Nation, Harris blamed Democrats, arguing that they are responsible for what he described as a damaging and dangerous lapse in government funding. He contended that the American public understands which party is at fault for the impasse. This is just more and more of the Democrat propaganda, Harris said. They know that American people know that at the end of the day, they are responsible for this shutdown that we've seen. Jeffrey has called on Johnson to bring lawmakers back to Washington to pass legislation reopening DHS, which plays a central role in border security, counterterrorism, and disaster response. Harris, however, dismissed the requests as political maneuvering and accused Democrats of failing to support prior funding efforts. According to Harris, the House previously passed a continuing resolution to keep the government funded and sent it to the Senate, but Democrats did not back the measure. He said the breakdown dates back roughly 10 days to the Senate actions that he believes contributed to the current funding lapse. The House was there in Washington. We stayed over. We voted and passed another funding bill, and you couldn't get Democrats to support it, Harris said. And yet, we passed it out of the House and sent it back to the Senate. Harris also raised national security concerns, pointing to tensions involving Iran as a reason DHS operations should remain fully funded. He warned that the shutdown could leave America vulnerable. At a time when there is international conflict, to think that they are moving to leave our homeland completely vulnerable is really unacceptable, he said. He credited President Donald Trump with mitigating some of the impact, citing an executive order that Harris said ensures DHS personnel continue to be paid during the shutdowns. Harris characterized the broader standoff as political games, expressing frustration with the gridlock and urging a resolution to restore full funding to the agency. Retired Navy pilot Buckley to Newsmax, Iran Rescue Mission Incredible by Jim Mishler. The U.S. military's rescue of downed airmen in Iraq was absolutely incredible, retired Navy pilot Matthew Buckley told Newsmax on Monday. Buckley told America Agenda that the mission shows the skill of America's armed forces and that every aspect of the rescue was amazing. There is no other military on the face of this planet that can fight its way into bad guy countries, set up a temporary airport, he said. Buckley described how U.S. forces performed a hasty airstrip setup well inside Iran to support aircraft, including small helicopters, to complete the final stage of the rescue of the downed airmen. We actually set up a temporary airport that had little birds, he said. Those C-130s coughed up a couple of small helicopters to be able to go pick up this back seat or this Wizzo, and then to fight our way out, Buckley said, referencing the transport aircraft used to transport helicopters during the mission to rescue the missing weapon systems officer, WSO. This is just absolutely peak American exceptionalism at its height, he said. Buckley said the mission will be talked about for decades. We're talking about all levels of government, the CIA deception campaign. Hey, go look over there, potentially. And they did, he said. And we actually had a decoy search and rescue forcing going in that direction to completely confuse the Iranians. Just an absolute masterclass. Buckley said the successful mission is another indicator to nations that want to tangle with the U.S. that we're not going to leave anybody behind, no matter what the price tag is. J.D. Vance travels to Hungary days before election, hoping to boost Orbán's campaign. Vice President J.D. Vance arrived in Hungary on Tuesday in a bid to turn the tide of an election campaign where long-serving Prime Minister Viktor Orbán, a close ally of President Donald Trump, is trailing in the polls. Vance's two-day trip, where he is scheduled to hold an official visit with Orbán and later appeared at one of his campaign rallies, offered the clearest sign yet that Trump administration is going all in for Orbán victory when Hungarians go to the polls on Sunday. Orbán is running for his fifth straight term as prime minister. He and his nationalist populist Fidesz party are facing their toughest race in two decades against a center-right challenger, the Tisza party, led by Peter Magyar, that could bring an end to Orbán's 16 years in power. Long accused by critics of taking over Hungary's institutions, clamping down on press freedom, and overseeing entrenched political corruption, charges he denies, Orbán has become an icon in the global far-right movement. Trump has repeatedly endorsed Orbán's candidacy for re-election, and many in the Make America Great Again movement approve of the Hungarian leadership's opposition to immigration, curtailing of LGBTQ plus rights, and capture of media and academia. But with most independent polls showing a double-digit deficit for Fidesz among decided voters ahead of the April 12th vote, Orbán has sought to boost his profile by appearing publicly with his international admirers. Vance and his wife, Usha, were greeted at the Budapest airport on Tuesday by Hungary's foreign minister, Peter Szijjártó. The two men greeted one another warmly, and Szijjártó presented Usha Vance with a bouquet of flowers. Szijjártó told state media from the airport that Vance is the first U.S. vice president to visit Hungary since 1991 and the highest-ranking U.S. official in the country since 2006. Magyar, who has pledged to draw Hungary back toward its Western partners and end its drift towards Moscow, gave a pointed critique of Vance's visit and social media posts on Tuesday. No foreign country may interfere in Hungarian elections. This is our country, Magyar wrote. Hungarian history is not written in Washington, Moscow, or Brussels. It is written in Hungary's streets and squares. I respectfully ask the U.S. Vice President, who is coming to Hungary, that if he is already campaigning for Viktor Orbán, the Hungarian people should not pay the price, Magyar said. Vance's visit wasn't the first sign of U.S. support of Orbán. Hungary, which has broken with most European Union countries by refusing to assist Ukraine with financial assistance or weapons to ward off Russia's full-scale invasion, has remained firmly committed to purchasing Russian energy despite EU efforts to wean off supplies. In November, Hungary received an exemption from U.S. sanctions on Russian oil and gas after a White House meeting between Orbán and Trump. In February, Secretary of State Marco Rubio visited Budapest, where he enthusiastically praised Orbán and the person-to-person connection he'd established with the president, telling Orbán that Trump was deeply committed to your success because your success is our success. Last month, Orbán hosted dozens of allies from around Europe and beyond at the Hungarian iteration of the Conservative Political Action Conference and at a meeting of the far-right Patriots for Europe party family, the third largest group in the European Parliament. Trump sent a video message to CPAC Hungary saying Orban has his complete and total endorsement and was a fantastic guy. The Trump administration embrace of Orban reflects affinity for European far-right parties broadly, and the admiration from Spain to France to Germany and the Netherlands has been mutual. Still, Trump's recent approach to foreign affairs has reverberated in Europe, with his actions over Greenland, Venezuela, and Iran straining those relationships. Orban, however, has remained deferential and has echoed Trump's claim that he won the 2020 election. In comments to state radio just before Trump has began his second term, Orban said Democrats took the presidency away from Donald Trump through fraud. Vance's planned appearance at Orban's election rally was an unusual step from a foreign leader and a break with the practice of most politicians who avoid actively taking part in the political campaigns of other countries. Orban himself has bristled at the slightest mention of the Hungarian election by other EU leaders, decrying any expressions of support for his opponent as a grave breach of Hungary's sovereignty and meddling in the election. ICE arrested over 800 using TSA security tips. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement arrested more than 800 people following tips shared by federal airport security officials from the start of Donald Trump's presidency through February 2026. Internal ICE data reviewed by Reuters show a figure far above what was previously publicly known. The leads came from the Transportation Security Administration, which supplied ICE with records on more than 31,000 travelers for possible immigration enforcement, the data showed. Reuters could not determine how many arrests took place inside airports, although the TSA tips would mainly be useful in determining when a person would be traveling. ICE and TSA are part of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. The agencies have historically shared information related to national security threats, but they began focusing on routine immigration arrests last year as part of Trump's mass deportation effort. The 31,000 traveler records were gathered by TSA's Secure Flight Program, which was created in 2007 to allow the agency to review passenger information for people who may be on U.S. government watch lists. The program was intended as a counterterrorism measure, not to track down immigration offenders, according to the regulation outlining its purpose. DHS did not respond to questions about TSA providing passenger information to ICE, but said that under Trump's TSA is pursuing solutions that improve resiliency, security, and efficiency across our entire system. Figures for arrests and traveler records said that TSA shared with ICE before Trump's current term were unavailable. U.S. airport and immigration enforcement have been at the center of a partisan funding fight since mid-February, when Democrats refused to support additional money for the Republican president's immigration crackdown without reforms to scale back excessive tactics. The standoff blocked the passage of a bill to fund DHS, which caused TSA security officers to miss at least two full paychecks. After some unpaid TSA officers began calling in sick, Trump deployed ICE officers to more than a dozen airports in March to aid security efforts. Democrats have criticized the deployment and called on the Trump administration to remove them. A group of more than 40 Democrats in the U.S. House of Representatives wrote in a letter to recently installed Homeland Security Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen last week that ICE officers will cause confusion and fear if allowed to remain in airports. Several cases of ICE officers arresting travelers in U.S. airports have sparked backlash. ICE officers detained a college student traveling from Boston to Texas to celebrate Thanksgiving in November and arrested a sobbing mother at San Francisco International Airport the day before Trump's airport deployment began. DHS defended both arrests and said they were subject to final orders of removal. Reuters spoke with three immigration attorneys who said they were familiar with cases of people without legal immigration status being arrested in airports. The cases include an Irish couple who had lived in the U.S. for more than two decades and were detained last summer by immigration authorities in front of their children when trying to fly from Florida to New York after a vacation, Christina Canty, one of the lawyers, said. The parents, who had been had pending applications for permanent residency, were deported and left their two young children, ages 7 and 10, with adult siblings in the U.S., Canty said. In another case, a Chinese woman with a final order of removal who was seeking permanent residence was detained by ICE last year at the Atlanta airport en route to Philadelphia, one of the attorneys said. Eric Navarro to Newsmax, Iran forces being degraded daily. U.S. strikes on Iranian military targets, including the new wave against Karg Island, are steadily weakening Tehran's forces as pressure mounts on the regime and its leadership, Colonel Eric Navarro told Newsmax on Tuesday. We're grinding them up every single day, and each day the forces are being degraded to a level that we haven't seen, with hundreds of sorties a day, Navarro, the director of military and strategic programs at the Middle East Forum, said. Newsmax's Wake Up America, the Karg Island strikes are just going to ramp up. Navarro pointed to a broader operational effort targeting key locations affecting the Strait of Hormuz. They are islands in this region that are impacting the Strait of Hormuz that will have to be cleared in order to reopen the strait, he said. All of this is done where there's a constant planning and execution done on rapid cycle, and you're seeing it executed brilliantly. He also described President Donald Trump's recent warnings about Iran as part of a strategic messaging effort. This is non-kinetic fires with a desired audience target, probably the Iranian people, the Iranian government, or what's left of it all, trying to impact or ramp up the pressure to get them to comply with our demands, Navarro said. Navarro added that internal unrest in Iran could further destabilize the regime, noting limited public support and restricted communications. I think prior to this conflict, we estimated that only about 20% of the population supported the theocracy. But I will also note that the internet has been down in the entire country since this conflict started. That's because the Iranian regime fears its own people learning the truth about what's happening. I'm Eileen, and you've been listening to Newsmax Tuesday, April 7th. Thank you for listening to the Talking Information Center.